Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's time for Barbecue Nation with JT. So fire up your grill, light the charcoal, and get your smoker cooking. Now, from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, here's JT.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Nation. That's the Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with my second in command, producer Dave and commander Chris, and we're coming to you from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, Oregon. And we'd like to thank everybody for listening today on the affiliates of Barbecue Nation and the Envision Radio Networks. If you ever been to Montana, you might have run into these guys. I'm not sure, but you might have. And if you've been in any of the national competitions, the Royal, the Jack, and a few other ones, you've certainly run into these guys. Rick Hamilton and the Montana Outlaws is going to be joining us this week. Speaking of outlaws, our music this week is going to be from Waylon. And this segment of Barbecue Nation is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef the way nature intended. For more information, go to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Rick, welcome back, bud. What you been doing?
Just recovering from the Jack and the 2 weeks you spent in Tennessee. I have Tyrell here with me as well.
Oh, hi, Ty. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, not a problem. I always enjoy talking to you guys. So it's been about a year and a half or so since you've been on the show. Tell us about some of your adventures out there in barbecue land.
Yeah, so we've been still trying to travel and hit some contests more regionally up here, but we've also kind of taking the mindset that when we go and compete, we've competed at the big contest quite a few times now. We've been 4 years in a row to the Royal and the Jack, and fortunate to have some qualifiers in for hopefully year five. But we've decided when we go and compete, we want to find contests that are unique, that are in an area maybe we've never been to or have a good event attached to them. So this year we've competed in two new places. We competed in the Giant Barbecue Battle in Washington, D.C. in June. And then we did Munford, Kentucky, because we've heard a lot about that contest, and it didn't disappoint.
I used to spend a lot of time in Kentucky. I was never disappointed there on anything. So it was good. Well, tell us about Washington, D.C. We had Tom Gearhart on here a few weeks ago. He had competed there, and, of course, he was a big winner at the Royal this year. But I thought that was a real interesting event in itself in Washington with, especially tagging on to veterans and all the ancillary projects that come with that. What was your take on that?
Yeah, it was a great contest. We really enjoyed it. We went back there because a majority of our family had never been to D.C., so we kind of used that as an opportunity to go back there and obviously do a little sightseeing. But the event itself is just unique because I think you could pick any contest in the world, and it would be hard-pressed to find one with such a known backdrop as the United States Capitol. And being three blocks off of it and the type of crowd they pull in, and like you said, mentioned the work they do with the veterans and different organizations that benefit it, it's just a unique contest and an opportunity for us to cook a couple of categories we don't normally cook, in the lamb and the turkey, and as well as our four other main categories. So it was just a really great time. We saw a lot of teams we only see when we compete at national contests like the Royal or the Jack, that being like Tuffy Stone and the guys from Shake and Bake and Blues Hog and just right. A bunch of other teams that we don't see on a normal basis up in our part of the country. So it was a great contest. We hope to make it back. If the next year doesn't work, we'll try and shoot for the year after.
So I got to ask you a question here. It's kind of politically motivated, but how did it feel to be with you and all the barbecue compatriots there? How did it feel to be the most sane people inside the Capitol?
you can say that. That's one good way, probably politically correct way to put it.
Because I think a lot of people probably question our sanity just doing
you. You what? I'm sorry?
People question our sanity just because we do barbecue competitions like we do.
Oh, no.
So,
well, I
so
think
there,
I think you're I think that's fine. I think you're above the deal. But you get down around the Capitol Mall, and you get the building with the big dome on it, and you get all the office buildings, and then you stand there and think, you know, I'm on top of this deal. So
it's all good. You know, so that was one of the more unique contests that we've been to in a long time, and like I said, funny that they've give back to the veterans organizations is incredible. So it's always fun to be part of those type of contests to give back, and that's kind of been we've changed gears a little bit and want to start working more towards that as an organization in Montana Outlaw Barbecue, taking what we've learned and we've acquired and going to these big contests and meeting these great people. And now, you know, we kind of want to support organizations and support projects that give back to those that have sacrificed a lot for what given us the ability to do what we do.
Absolutely. This show is going to air Saturday, and on Friday here at my base radio station, we're doing a radiothon to help the veterans in this area, and they can still do it even if they listen to this show and the radiothon's over. There'll be information on the websites and stuff, but it's one of those deals. My dad went across the beaches of Normandy on June 6, 1944, and was gone in the service for over 3 years, actually. And anything we can do to help those guys is great.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's good. We got a couple minutes here before we got to go to break. What have you guys learned? I mean, we learn stuff every day. I get that. But, you know, when you're looking at, you've been on the road competing now for a couple, 3 years, what have you learned about your style, your technique, your presentation? We might not get it all in this segment, but we can pick it up again in the next one. But Ty, you or Rick, either one can chime in on that.
So I'll kind of take that one. I think it's more we kind of shoot for that middle of the road as far as flavor goes. And I guess the best advice I could give to a young team is you just got to make sure you nail your tenderness. And you have that eye for detail. I mean, as much as presentation goes, you know, it's not a salad contest, I get it, but make sure your greens are in good order. And I mean, you place meat in there and you want people to open the box and say, man, I really want to take a bite of that. And then hopefully your flavors and your tenderness match what you look at it. But we just, I think over the years, refined it. It's kind of funny you bring that up. We look back at our first trip to the Jack in 2016, and we were fortunate enough to get a port call, and I have pictures of every box we've turned in since then. And I have to see the progression from where we were then to where we are now. It's night and day difference. And just our presentation, and to think, I think the group as a whole, barbecue as a whole, has gotten so much more, maybe not so much more, but it puts more of an emphasis on the presentation of it and how it looks and how it appears. And the cooks as a whole have gotten so much better that what was winning 5, 6, 7 years ago won't win today. I mean, everybody has gotten that much better.
That's kind of the way it is in most very competitive endeavors, whether it's, you know, football or golf or cooking or what have you. You know, we progress and we learn, and we always tweaking things and pushing the envelope a little bit, not so much on flavors, but you know, like you say, on style and technique and that, and I think that's a good thing. It makes it more palatable for the civilian population to come look at it, maybe want to get involved.
Yeah, and always have to keep in mind too that consistency will win contests. I mean, if you cook one item perfectly and you can't cook the other three, you're never going to win. Because, you know, you don't have to win every category. You don't have to win any categories. But if you're consistent in the top five all the way across the board, you're going to win.
Right. And that's the way it should be. I mean, yeah. You know, I know people that can make one just in their daily lives. Some of my friends, they can cook one thing and they do it very well. I mean, you know, you would sit down to dinner and eat that. You just wouldn't sit down to eat that five nights a week. You know, that's not really what you kind of want to do. You'd be looking to dart out the door to McDonald's or something.
Yeah. And I think barbecue does a good job of that in honoring those. KCBS does a good job with the 700 Club and the 180 Club. And I guess people have always asked us, you know, we've been fortunate enough. We have 4 700 scored in since 2016, and we've got 2 180s. And I put more pride on the 700s myself because it shows that consistency that you can show up and you can turn in 4 really good product, really good meat presentations as far as your product goes. So for me, yeah, the 700 club and the consistency is kind of where I hang my hat on.
Before Rick and I head out for break here, I want to share something with you. The Israeli startup company Redefine Meat plans to launch 3D printers to produce plant-based steaks mimicking real beef next year in a bid for a slice, no pun intended, of the fast-growing alternative meat market. Meat substitutes are increasingly popular with consumers concerned about animal welfare and the environment, boosting sales at Beyond Meat, Impossible Foods, and Nestle's. Redefine Meat, based in Rehovot, south of Tel Aviv, will first market tests its alternative steaks, at high-end restaurants this year before rolling it out in an industrial scale of 3D printers to meat distributors in 2021. You'll need a 3D printer to mimic the structure of the muscle of the animal, says their CEO, whose name I cannot pronounce, and I apologize for that. The machines to be launched next year will be able to print a 20 kilogram an hour, or eventually hundreds at a lower cost. Let me start that over. You'll need a 3D printer to mimic the structure of the meat and the muscle, says their CEO. The machines to be launched next year will be able to print 20 kilograms an hour of meat and eventually hundreds of kilograms an hour of their pseudo meat at a lower cost than real meat. Founded in 2018, the company raised $6 million last year in a round led by CPT Capital, an investor in Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods. So alternative meat sales could reach $140 billion a year by 2029, about 10% of the world's meat market, according to Barclays. Spanish competitor Novamit is also working on a 3D printed plant meat, including a whole muscle pork cut developed during the coronavirus crisis, which disrupted the pork supply. We'll be back in just a few minutes right here on Barbecue Nation. Hey everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef.
What a long time forgotten, our dreams have just fell by the
way. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT. We've got Rick and Ty from the Montana Outlaws. How did you guys ever come up with that name? I think I asked you a couple years ago when you were on the show, but to be honest, you know, I kind of forgot.
We thought back about that a couple different times. I mean, we really don't know when exactly it happened. We were kind of the Western theme, and we had these big hats for a while, and these busters, you know, we kind of look like outlaws, and I think that's kind of how it came about. There wasn't any, you know, lightning strike moment that caused it. We just kind of evolved that way, I think.
Well, you got some cool sweatshirts in your logo, because I saw that online when I reached out to you to come back on the show, and I looked at that on Facebook, and I went, wow, that's nice. That looks good.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, looks really good. So are you guys still cooking on the same cookers? Have you stepped up, stepped sideways? What are you doing that way?
I think when the last time we talked to you, we were still cooking on a Southern Q gravity feed. We've since graduated up to Jambo.
Yeah.
And now we do all our competition cooking on Jambo.
Well, there you go. Do you like it? I mean, you obviously like it for competition, but I mean, tell us about the difference between the two for you.
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, our big hesitation to go to the Jambo was the lack of hardwood in Montana. That's why the gravity feed made so much sense. We could order smaller chunks. We could just run any kind of charcoal we wanted in there, and it was easy to get that kind of natural smoke. Now we order our wood in by the pallet from Missouri and from Vaughn Wood Products, and that's how we kind of mitigated the fact that we don't have hardwood in Montana to cook with. But the smoke flavor that comes off of Jambo, I mean, it's unparalleled in my opinion. I mean, there's others out there that are kind of replicating the Jambo pits, and I've had some food off of them, and they're winning on the competition circuit. But to get that true wood fire, you just can't replicate that type of smoke flavor with any other cooker, in my opinion.
Not really. I mean, I'm a pellet guy, and that's for convenience. Mm-hmm. you know, unless I've still got some offsets and things like that. But normally I just pretty much use my pellet cookers for my, you know, family and weekend warriors, or if I'm doing, I don't do much catering anymore, but when I did, I use those a lot. But when I've got a whole weekend and I want to piddle around with stuff, I pull out my old offset cookers and load it up with wood and go for it, you know?
Yeah, there you go. And that's what, you know, I'm with you. We use Traegers at home. I have a Traeger, Rick has a Traeger, and that's really what we use as our general day-to-day cooker, because yeah, to get up, get a fire going and to do an 8-hour brisket, it's just not realistic for us or anybody for that matter on a normal day-to-day basis.
Right. Right.
And Traeger's one of our sponsors for barbecue here, also. We're really happy to be associated with them.
Well, absolutely. We're going to talk about barbecue heroes in our next segment, because I think that's fascinating. By the way, we're talking to the Montana Outlaws, Rick and Ty. And you mind if I call you Ty, or do you want me to call you Tyrell?
No, Ty's perfect.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, I thought maybe you were correlating to the old Sackett's Westerns, and they had to call him Tyrell.
Yeah, that's where my name came from. But, you know, it's a easy name to misspell, mispronounce, and so I'd go by Ty for short, and it seems to work out better.
It's easier to write down, that's for damn sure. Yeah. So in your travels, and like, you know, you went to Kentucky, you've been to Washington, D.C., you're doing some of these other events. When you get there and you know, like you say, you're not, it's not places you've been before, and that, have you found a difference in the way they won either organize and run the competition, or the way the competition is kind of looked upon by a lot of local competitors? I mean, did you learn anything that way?
I think well-run contests are well-run no matter where they're at in the country. KCBS has their standards, and their closer reps are really, really good. Elm had a little more regional distinctions about, you know, how they do their festivals and how they do this, but, you know, for the most part, a well-run contest is the same no matter where you go in the country. I would say that the biggest thing that I've noticed from going into different areas, different parts of the country to cook is, for Montana up here, or even in the Pacific Northwest for the most part, for that matter, our prize money is so much higher, and I think that's just because people travel further to get here. We're trying to pull teams up to this part of the country, so we have to entice them with something. So it's an event, it's prize money. You go back into the Midwest and then back east a little bit, and the prize money that we think is pretty standard, $10,000, $12,000, $13,000, isn't what they cook for back there. They're cooking for $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 on a weekend. And, you know, for us, as much as we, as far as we have to go to do it, we can't go and cook a contest that only has $4,000 or $5,000 in prize money.
Right. Well, it's just like I said, any professional sport. You know, when I was in the horse business, if we were going to go show in Las Vegas or show in Denver, and, you know, they had $50,000. This was years ago, so the numbers weren't that big. But they had $50,000 total prize money at that show. We went there instead of just, you know, Moose Nose, Utah, where they had $1,000 in prize money.
Right, exactly. And that's where we're backing off, and we're only doing, you know, 7-8 contests a year. We're like I referenced in the first segment, we're a little more picky on where we go. We want an event, we want a destination, and we want to go for prize money.
Well, and you want some place that's fun too to go to.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, you can spend a lot of time out there traveling, whether it's barbecue or whatever else you're into, and you can go to places that really aren't that much fun, and it makes for a very long weekend.
It does. Yeah.
You want to hit that Coleman cooler pretty fast. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not much fun just go to a parking lot somewhere and cook.
No.
There's probably something else there.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing about that, I'm not being snarky here, but, you know, you get there, and especially if it's in the summertime and it's hot and you're standing on asphalt and, you know, you've got a tent over you or a canopy or something like that, but you can kind of look across the parking lot and see the heat waves coming up. You know, you're not going to get a whole lot of public attention that way on that day either.
No. And that's in today's day and age of barbecue. Everybody's got, you know, there's thousands of rubs out there. There's thousands of sauces out there. You go to the big contests, the Royal more so than the Jack, but some of these bigger contests, it's all about marketing. There's film crews everywhere. That just wasn't the case, you know, 6 years ago when we were getting going with it. You didn't see that type of digital media kind of attention that today the sport is getting.
I Googled something about barbecue the other day in prepping for one of my shows. And in, you know, 2.3 seconds, 7 million items came up. 7 million.
That's amazing.
In change, you know, and I'm like, holy crap. That's a lot.
Anybody that wants to see what barbecue and social media and digital looks like, you go to the American Royal and just count the number of film crews walking around, the number of tents that are shooting tutorials, how-to videos on Friday before things really get going. It's absolutely amazing the difference from when we started going.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to take a break. Rick and Ty will be back with us in just a minute on The Nation. Don't go away. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef.
I've held it all in word. God knows.
Welcome back to The Nation. That's the Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, and today we've got Rick and, it's Rick Hamilton. All right. Is Ty your last name Hamilton, too?
Yes, sir.
That's what I thought.
Father, son, it's all family.
That's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure. I didn't want to sound like a total boob. from the Montana Outlaws, and again, this segment of Barbecue Nation is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef the way nature intended. For more information, go to PaintedHillsNaturalBeef.com, and I can tell you, you will enjoy every bite of it. So, your film project. Rick, tell us what you're doing and then why you're doing it.
Okay, our newest project, we've just started this. Well, actually, it's a project we've been working on for almost 2 years. But just now, it's starting to take shape. It's called Barbecue Heroes. We've decided that, you know, we've been competing. We've met all these great people, heard all these great stories, seen all this stuff. We want to give something back. And so what we decided was this project fit our family goals. And what we do is we look for people who have given things in their communities, made a positive impact, and never really ask for anything back, and really don't want recognition. They just are doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And what we do is we surprise them with a brand new grill from Traeger and all the accessories. We show up at their place, wherever they live. Then we spend a day with them, showing how to grill different things. And we instruct them and show them how to cook a meal for 10 of their closest friends. And when we're all done, they get to keep all the equipment, and hopefully we leave them with a memory that they'll remember for a long time.
And where's this gonna air, Rick?
Well, it's gonna be on right away. I start with it's gonna be on the internet, probably on YouTube will be our deal. It's gonna be a network ready presentation. We have some interest in it. We haven't signed up on it firmly yet, but it'll be out there.
Good.
We just did our first episode in Nashville right before the Jack to a tremendous guy, Gary. It was just a great experience for everybody, and we can't wait to do it again. We're already looking for our next episode.
Are they like 22 minutes long, regular TV time?
Yeah, 23 minutes long.
Yeah.
And so there's commercial breaks figured into it now. So the setup, we were 3 days filming in Nashville. Now the editors are doing their magic with it, condensing it down to 23 minutes. And then we'll go market the program. But we're just excited to do it. The people, it's the hardest part is finding the stories, finding the people, because these people aren't really looking to be found. So we have to really do our due diligence and really talk to, you know, who knows who, and you know someone, do you know somebody? And anybody has a hero in their back of their mind that they know that would be somebody that we could honor, you know, go to our webpage, and we have a section on there about, you know, Barbecue Hero.
Cool. Now, what did Gary think it was all when it was all said and done? What was his reaction?
Oh, he was blown away. You know, he was the perfect person in the fact that he didn't believe that anything that he'd done really qualified him to be deemed a hero like that. It's just what he figured was expected of him.
Right.
And that's really one of the reasons why he got chosen, because he went above and beyond every day. Without being asked to do so. So, I mean, he was blown away. He's, and I don't want to let too much out about the episode because, like I say, hopefully we get it out here before we're hoping, I think, in December to launch it on YouTube and social media. But he's a guy that's interested in getting into competition barbecue. So we talked a lot about competition barbecue. We talked a lot about how to do different styles of cooking from all the way from at home to a catering to a competition. And so we just had a great time. And really for us, it wasn't, you know, we didn't have to do a bunch of start stop. We're going to take two because it was just such a natural thing. And the film crews were just kind of there, but we were just a couple of guys sitting around talking barbecue. It was just a really great experience.
You know, it's so nice. I've filmed a lot of stuff and been involved in that, but it is so nice when you can just kind of run, you know, let the footage run, so to speak, and and do that and not have to go back and do takes. I know when we're filming canned stuff, we got to go back and do it a number of times, depending on how much I screw up. But and I know it's hard to believe, but that does happen. Especially on,
I'm right there with you.
Especially on Tuesdays for some reason. But anyway, yeah, it's nice when you can just get, because you get the real feel for it, you know, of what of what the guest is going through and that. So that's a really nice thing. Have you had a lot of suggestions?
Yeah, we've had really good response. We've got quite a few from Montana that we're looking at. We've got some other ones from across the country that we'll be looking at here. As a matter of fact, we get off the phone here, we got another phone call to start talking about maybe getting another one set up. But kind of one of those things, this is a pilot episode. We want to get it out. We've had some very generous people hop on board with it. Obviously, like Rick mentioned, Traeger Grills, ThermalWorks hopped on board and gave everyone that was included there one of their products. We've had Compart Family Farms hopped on and supplied some ribs for us to cook, as well as Stone Ranch Wagyu in Montana helped us out with some Wagyu products. So we've had a lot of great people. A local Ace Hardware in Tennessee was who we partnered with to go and get all the materials and supplies that we needed. So obviously we want to get this out there to recognize those people that helped us out with this first pilot episode, but also to see if there's other companies out there whose kind of mission statement and vision and goals kind of align with ours and the giving back. And we want to hear from them, and we want to help, you know, kind of cross brand and grow everybody's brand, because that's the easiest way to get your product in front of people and grow as an organization.
Absolutely. If I said, Ty, where do you ultimately want to see this program end up?
Oh, I would love to see this as a network show that's, you know, shooting a series and a number of episodes. I think in 2020, our goal is to shoot somewhere between 4 and 6. And I would love to get this on a national network, because it really, like I say, it's all about giving back and honoring those that sacrifice everything in their communities every day and don't think that they're doing anything special. They're just doing what's expected. But when in reality, they're going above and beyond every single day, and to get them recognized. And what we found is a lot of these people are tied to some sort of nonprofit organization or something in their community. And when we're there, like in Nashville, we were able to cook a benefit that raised a couple $1,000s for a nonprofit that he's a part of. And that's what it's really all about, is recognizing them, but also bringing awareness to these nonprofits that probably every day do so much for their communities, but struggle to continue to survive because everybody's dollars were stretched so thin today.
Right. And don't you find it interesting that the stuff you see on TV now, not talking about your show, but when they do this or you read about them and the, you know, they go to, you go to a dinner or a barbecue or whatever, and they raise $2 million in one night. Mm-hmm. But it's the guys and ladies in the local communities. Like you said, you raised $2,000. That was a big deal. You know,
absolutely.
That's a big deal for the local small nonprofits that are trying to help their own community, their own family and friends, you know, sometimes I think we get kind of people in general through the media, which we're all part of now, but, you know, you get a little jaundice on that thinking, well, they didn't raise very much money, so it must not be worth it. That's not true. That's not true. They just don't have the firepower behind them to get on network television or nationally syndicated radio and say something about it. So
exactly. And that's I think the ultimate goal is just to get there and help raise awareness for these smaller companies that, like I say, the group that we raised $2,000 for, every single dollar they make goes right out. They don't pay administrative fees to anybody. It's all volunteers. So for them, that's $2,000 that they didn't have to raise. It's going to get other people back out in their communities and give them a leg up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fun to do those things, Kind of makes you feel good.
That's where we really enjoy it, because as we look at it, and like I say, everybody has to have an end game in barbecue. You can go and travel and keep doing it for years, but I mean, at some point, traveling, you know, family and time and everything else becomes hard to do. And so for us, we look at the teaching avenue as hopefully an avenue we can get into. And this is just the easiest way to do it. We stand around, we talk barbecue, and we teach somebody a skill that, and it may be, that might give them a hobby that they didn't have before.
Absolutely. Now,
quite honestly,
go ahead.
You hear the stories from these people. It's pretty humbling. Some of the stories, what these people are doing, makes you feel pretty humble. There's some great people. There's great people all across the country. You just don't ever hear about them.
That's true. That's true. Like I said, they're very community oriented. They do things. I mean, I've got a soft spot in my heart, of course, from the military for obvious reasons. But, you know, a lot of those people, one, the people that need it don't like to ask for help. And two, the people that are raising funds or products for them or whatever, they tend to want to just stand behind the curtain and, you know, let the good stuff roll to the people who need it and not be out there saying, hey, I did this.
Exactly. All right.
No, it's all good. So guess what? The Outlaws and I are going to be back in a couple of minutes. But real quickly, again, if you'd like to send us an email, it's Barbecue Nation, BBQNation at SalemPDX.com. Launch that new website. I talked about it last week. It's not completely finished, but I got a lot of pressure to launch it. So it's out there, and that's just BBQ Nation with JT, just right across. Not with, just BBQNationJT.com, and it's right there. So we've got a lot of pretty pictures up there and some nice links, and I'm just building on it every week now. So there you go. You know, kimchi just isn't pickled cabbage. This before we go to break here. Although cabbage is most widely known as for the base of kimchi, the staple of the Korean table is more of a preservation method than a single food. Eric Kim writes, I think of it as a verb. You can kimchi just about anything. The dish can be made with fennel, tomatoes, radishes, scallions, cucumbers, and other veggies. If you're in a hurry, he suggests take a quicker alternative. He likes to combine vegetables with vinegar and achieve a kimchi-like results, which he thinks of as quick kimchi. The key is to pre-salt the vegetables for at least 30 minutes to dry out some of their moisture. In Korea, these technically would be considered munchums, which can be referred to any number of seasoned or dressed salads and other preparations, munchums. But you can make your own kimchi. Just a lot of salt and some veggies and a little vinegar. We'll be back with Barbecue Nation right after this. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef.
Just a good old boy.
Welcome back to the Nation here on the Envision Radio Networks. We thank you all for listening. I appreciate that. And so do my cohorts, the Outlaws here, Rick and Ty. So I got to ask you, what's your biggest pain in the butt about driving across the country to compete?
The crappy roads in America.
How true.
Man, I tell you what, we need to do some work on our infrastructure. I mean, they about beat you to death through Iowa there, and I hate picking any state, South Dakota. They had a lot of flooding this year, so, I mean, it's not their fault, but, man, the roads are rough.
The roads are rough, and I've traveled a few of them, as you can imagine, and we never quite seem to get it all fixed. You know what I mean? It's those people out there in those yellow vests and the little signs that say stop and delay your trip for 5 hours, you know, like that. And not their fault either. They're just doing their job. But, man, I wish, you know, it's not like we can't produce asphalt in this country.
Exactly.
We can do that. So where are you going from here with the Outlaws on your crusade as far as competition?
Well, I think next year we were just talking about sitting down here as the holidays approach and starting to come up with our schedule. We've got a couple of contests on our radar. Again, hopefully, like I say, we have two draws in for the Jack already, which considering that's only started August 1st, we're pretty We're pretty tickled about that, to have two draws in, one in Kentucky and one in Montana. And then we have, we'll be going back to the Royal again, looking at a contest in Idaho, Boise area. We're talking about, we'll probably do some Montana ones, maybe back into Colorado. But again, we're going to probably be in that 7 to 8 contest again next year, as time allows. But really, our focus is going to kind of gear towards our, we pumping out about 4 to 6 episodes of Barbecue Hero, and that's going to be a time-consuming process as well.
There's a couple contests still on our bucket list. We still like to do the Houston Stock Show and Memphis in May. Whether or not we get them done this year or not, we never know, but they're on our bucket list too, and our radar, that we want to hit them someday.
Stock Show, you'd have fun in Memphis too, you know, because you can do your, I heard you do a mean Elvis impersonation, Rick, but, you know.
I look like the latter Elvis, I think.
Ah, yeah, well, me too, unfortunately, but. But I don't like them nanners that much, you know, buy me some nanners. Houston's a blast. And I have not been to Memphis in May. I've been to Memphis a few times, and that's kind of on my bucket list too, just to go hang out with some of the teams and sample stuff and look around and just have some fun. That's one of the things about my job. I don't have to cook that much anymore. So, you know, I just get to eat. You know, of course, it shows, but I don't care.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, like I say, bucket list items, bucket list contest of, you know, at some point, I'd like to go overseas and maybe cook a couple of contests. And so we'll see how it all plays out. But yeah, we're kind of to where if we can get into the national contest or win a grand championship somewhere in the qualifying year that gets us into the national contest, then now we can start being picky on where we go.
You know, you ought to make a challenge for all the big guys. Tuffy and Myron and those guys, have them come up to Montana in January.
That might be a hard sell. We can't get them up here in July, let alone in January, but
I know,
I don't even want to be here in January.
But if you told them you were going to film it and it was going to be fun and you got some sponsor to put up $25,000, I bet you they'd come.
You might get something put together, but yeah, it would be, It'd be a unique experience. You know, they did one in Denver for a number of years at the Stock Show in January, and I heard this year they're changing the dates of it. But that one was always a roll of the dice. We would enter it almost every year, and some years we made it, and some years the roads were closed.
So right, right.
I just never know. But
I'd just like to see Myron in a, you know, the red union suit with the flap panel in the back, tromping around in the snow. That it wouldn't be as good as Unidalia, Georgia, you know?
Yeah. And I guess the only other big thing that we got planned for 2020 right now is we talked a little bit about the teaching side of things and doing that. And we're don't have all the details yet, but we'll be, I would tell people to watch our social media coming up here pretty soon. There should be a tell-all competition class announcement coming up hopefully here in the next couple of weeks.
Well, there you go. That works. Now, can I con you guys into sticking around for the after-hours segment?
Yeah, you bet.
Okay. Well, that I was kind of hoping so because I put it in the script already. So I just didn't ask you that. We're going to get out of here for the regular show this week. I'd like to thank Rick and Ty Hamilton from the Montana Outlaws. If you're going to Montana, and even if you're not cooking, but you need something from a hardware store, Rick's got a hardware store up there. So you can.
Yeah. Anytime anybody's through up here, we always like to, meet up with them, and we'll have a beer and talk barbecue or talk anything. But we've got a couple of great contests in Montana and always love to have new teams come and join us.
Rick and I'll be back together shortly, and we want to thank him, but I want to tell you something I found out. The mesquite tree doesn't necessarily have a stellar reputation, as a lot of you might know, in the Texas Hill Country. It's generally regarded as a pest or a weed, or with one of those 2-inch long spiky thorns you might consider to be used as toothpicks in your spare time. When they're not tormenting innocent passerbys, the fact is the so hated the tree was in Texas as they started chopping it up into wood for wood chips and smoking it for really good barbecue. Okay, we got that part. But like the worst of us, the mesquite tree has at least one redeeming quality, and it's nestled right up there between those thorns. It's the beans. Looking similar to a long string bean, string bean pod. Mesquite beans must have known that their parents is, well, not so nice. So, because when you scrape the beans and it's milled down into flour of sorts, they're as warm and sweet, according to the author here, as a southern granny. It smells of hazelnut, cinnamon, cream, and molasses, and it adds the most unusual and unique spice flavor to any baked goods, and they're pretty dang good. A handful of southern bakers, like Sandeep Gwali, who since started the Texas Mesquite Movement to educate and promote the use of mesquite in the food industry. They've learned to hone the best parts of the pestering mesquite tree, turning the beans into a gluten-free and a superfood. There's a couple of perks for you there. A flour, that is. And they can be baked into delicious creations like mesquite sourdough bread, chocolate mesquite cookies, and even mesquite pancakes. Often mixed with wheat or white flour to temper its intense flavor and get enough gluten in the recipe to help the breads and pastries rise. Mesquite flour might be an heirloom southern ingredient, and mesquite flour might be a heirloom southern ingredient that people have long overlooked. You might want to give it a try. Try baking something with some mesquite flour if you can get your hands on it. If not, look on Amazon because they do sell it there. So you want to mix it with some all-purpose flour or some whole wheat flour, about two parts regular to one part mesquite, and that will ensure that you get a fluffy texture in any of the baked goods recipes you try. And they make pretty good chocolate chip cookies, as I'm told, too. So who'd have thunk? Mesquite flour, gluten-free.
Barbecue Nation is produced by JTSD LLC Productions in association with Envision Networks and Salem Media Group. All rights reserved.